About the things that control us. It may not be math, it may not be things of that sort, but God, there are many things that control us. And today, God, our prayer as we gather in this place, God, as we think about what it means to be free, as we think about our mind, as we think about if you care about the things that we think, the decisions we make, God, we're just going to ask that you would move in this place. God, we don't know what you want to do here, but we know that you're here. We acknowledge that, and we ask that you just meet us right where we're at today in your name. Amen. Just want to say welcome to you. If it's your first time with us, welcome. If you're here every week, welcome back. We're always glad to see you, especially in the summer when, you know, people are out of town. And it's just great to have you here. We're in this series called Integrate. And, you know, we've been taking a look, as Chris said at the front end, of how, you know, so many times we think we have all of these compartments of our life. And it's like, yeah, I have my physical life, my emotional life, my mental life, which is what we're going to be looking at today, the brain. And in case you didn't notice it over here, PJ has a great skull next to his computer here. I mean, you may have thought we were doing something kind of satanic here. Nothing to do with that. This is just a symbol that, you know, there's a part of our body, an intellect that we have, and God is concerned with that as well. And you know, if you were back in Jesus' day, if you're physically talking to Jesus and you were to say, well, you know, my spiritual life, people that day would have been like, whoa, what are you talking about? You don't have a spiritual life, you have a life. I mean, so many times we think, well, I have my spiritual life and then the rest of life. And they're like, no, everything's connected. What you experience physically, emotionally, mentally, relationally, the spiritual life is woven through all of that. And so Jesus is concerned with our life. And so we're taking a look these weeks at the different components of how we're integrated and how God wants to meet us in each and every one of those parts. And if, you know, if one place we don't allow God to kind of come in and in some way begin to radically transform, then we're going to miss out some of the key things that God designed us for. And so today, we're going to take a look at the mind, at the intellect, at this aspect and how the spiritual is woven through it. And so we've been taking a look at Mark chapter 12, verse 30, which is kind of our foundational verse for this series. And this is where Jesus is kind of saying, this is what's important. This is what it means to follow me. And I want you to take a look at a different version today. There's a version from the Amplified Bible, which kind of breaks this down as we look at the mind a little differently. This is what it says. When Jesus was asked, what's the most important thing? This is what he said. It said, you shall love the Lord your God out of and with your whole heart, out of and with your soul, meaning your life, out of and with your mind. All right. And then this version breaks it down and this says, with your faculty of thought and your moral understanding. So there's this idea that God isn't just concerned with the spiritual aspects, but it's woven through even the things we think about, how we think, how we process, how we understand. And out of and with all of your strength, this is the first and principal commandment. And so today, as we look at the mind, I mean, as we think about what is the mind made up of, I mean, first thing you think about is intelligence, right? I mean, our mind contains our intelligence. And the word intelligence, if you look it up on Wikipedia, actually says this. It comes from the Latin word intellegre, all right? And this word actually means to understand. All right, and so by this rationale, intelligence, meaning understanding, is arguably different than being smart. I mean, it's different than just the ability to adapt to one's environment. It's the ability to understand, to make changes, to make decisions, to understand how things work, how things are put together. And what's fascinating is, this, you know, we just saw this video from Brian, known as the Head Korn, Welch from the band Korn. And he talks about, he started his story. He said, in my head, I decided I'm going to accept Christ in front of everybody right now, and then I'm going to go home and snort drugs. And so, you know, you hear that and you're like, how could he do that? I mean, what he was doing, was it just a show? I mean, how could he do that? How could he say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this intellectually. Then I'm going to go and live differently. And yet when we think about that, I mean, that's not all that different than maybe decisions that you have made this week or that I have made this week. We've come to those places where we're like, God, this is what I want, God. This is what I'm going to go do. But then in some way, by the time it gets to our behavior, it turns into something different. And so we say in our mind, this is what I want, this is how I'm going to begin to live, and yet it oftentimes goes so drastically different. And so we begin to realize that there are things that control us, that control our thinking. As much as we want it to be a certain way, there are things that are attached to us, that get their claws in us, and they begin to control us. In fact, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he had this interesting quote a number of years ago. He said, as long as the mind is enslaved, the body can never be free. I mean, think about that for a moment. As long as the mind is enslaved, the body can never be freed. And so today I want us to talk about our cravings. I want to talk about our desires. If you think about the mind, I want to think about the things that influence our decisions, the things that we long for, that when we say, this is what I'm going to do, what are the things that steer us in another direction, the things that control us, the things that cause us to not be free, and many times free from ourselves. And so, you know, these are the things that we see, these are the things that we smell, these are the things that when we click on them, they bring up these primal instincts within us. I mean, these things that maybe when you see a certain thing, you smell something, or you touch something, or when you click on it again and again, you begin to do things that you say, this is not what I wanted to do, but somehow I'm there. And so it begins to pull up all of these things that you have no control over. And Jesus says, I'm concerned with this because these things have power over you. These certain things, they have power over your mind, over making the best decisions. And so we're going to talk about these cravings, desires. And kind of as a side note, for those of you in the room that are pregnant, which I have one of those in my home right now, if you have cravings, as we talk about cravings, you got like a free pass today, all right? You get a free pass from those things. I mean, if you're pregnant, then you, within reason at least, you have the ability to have certain cravings and to follow those. And so some of this doesn't apply to you. So, it's an interesting realization here. As we think about our cravings, the things that we long for, the things that shape our decisions, there's this interesting thought that our cravings are often about something else. Think about that for a moment. When you have a craving, we have a longing for something, it's often about something else. It's often the craving behind the craving. It's often the longing behind the longing. It's often the desire behind the desire. I mean, it's not just the thing that I'm doing, but there's something else that maybe is shaping and causing me to respond this way. For instance, it's the guy who's working himself to death, who's working 80, 90 hours a week. He's just constantly giving himself to his job, wanting to be better and better, working harder and harder. He's burning out. He's beginning to burn the relationships of the people around him that he loves the most. And yet there's something behind his longing. It's not that he just loves to work, but it's this longing to be successful. It's this, as we talked about last week, in the sense of the blessing, maybe he never heard those words from a person of influence, maybe specifically his father that said, son, I love you exactly the way you are. There's nothing you could do to make me love you more and make me love you less. But instead, it was this sense of, hey, if you perform well, then you're of value and worth to me. And so his whole life is spent working harder and harder, trying to be more successful. Because every time he's in a business deal, his value of life is on the line of whether he's worth something or not. And so it's not just that thing, but it's the thing behind the thing. Or it's the woman who's maybe had sex with more men in the last 2 years than you could ever ask or imagine. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And as you begin to understand her story, it's not just about the sexual thing. In fact, there's this longing for intimacy. There's this deep longing for a deep sense of connection. And really, as she begins to unpack it, it's about when she was 7 and the divorce of her parents. And somehow she connected herself and thought that somehow she was at fault for their divorce. And so she's always carried this sense of I'm responsible for this. And she's never had that sense of deep acceptance because she felt like she created something. And so it's not really about the physical stuff. It's not really about the sex. It's about this longing, this deep longing to be known, to be connected to something deeply. And so as we think about these things, as we think about these, it's the things behind the things. I mean, when we talk about these things, these are the things, these are the bondages, these are the things that we are chained to. These are the things that control us in a very real sense, that control our mind. That when we say, I want to go do this, I want to begin to live my life this way, or God, these are the decisions I'm going to make to honor you, and yet our lives go in a different direction. They take a different trajectory. And so I want to talk about these today because this is the mind. These are the things. This is the it behind the things that control us. And so if you have a Bible, turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4. And we're going to start there today. And we're going to look at some words of Paul. And Paul kind of breaks down. He says there's an understanding. There's a certain understanding that we have. And then there's things. And he kind of breaks it down. He gives us these two big phrases here that help us understand the cravings, the longings, the things that control us, that influence our mind. And so here's where he starts. So Ephesians chapter 4, beginning with verse 17. He says, so I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do. In the futility of their thinking. And so the futility of the thinking, what he's basically saying is the Gentiles, they were just known for living basically by their primal urges. I mean, if they want something, they go do it. If there's something they see that they crave or they long after, they just go and engage in it. There's no sense of decision-making or using their mind to logically think through things. It says, they are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. You know, it's interesting because whenever we see someone who's not quite capturing this sense, it's almost like Paul's saying, you're living in a fog, and he's saying it has to do with the pliability of your heart. And when our hearts get hard, it's interesting. It's interesting how we begin to lose touch with what God designs for us. It's interesting how we begin to kind of lose our mind. We begin to not be able to make sense of things. And then here's what Paul says. He says, having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality. And sensuality isn't just a sexual thing. It's all of the senses. It's all of the things that we long for that pull us in. So as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust or longing for more. So these two phrases right here that I want to focus on. The first is this, the beginning of that phrase right there. Having lost all sensitivity. I mean, what Paul's basically saying is, you know, it's one of those moments where we used to have one cup and now we have to have three. Or we had two cans and now we have to have five because the buzz just doesn't go like it used to. I mean, we've lost all sensitivity. What a six pack used to do now doesn't do it anymore. Because we lose sensitivity, and so now we need more. And before long, this thing that we began, this thing that started as something harmless, something that we say, I can handle this, all of a sudden begins to take control over us. Or maybe it's going on a shopping binge, and it used to be two things on sale, used to do, but now I need four or five in my bag to go home and feel like I was a success. You know, when Julie and I first got married on our honeymoon, we cruised through the Caribbean, and there was this amazing little contraption on the cruise ship that I noticed as I walked by it, that when you put money in it, it would spit money back at you. And I saw this a number of times as I was walking by, and I never really participated with one of these before. I mean, I didn't grow up in Vegas. They didn't have legalized gambling here in Indiana. And so it was one of those things, you know, I saw these people putting money in it, and it kept spitting it out. It was early in the week. I think the longer the week goes, the ratio or the odds of you winning decreases maybe. And so Julie and I thought, you know, this would be interesting. So we took $20 each. We said, we're gonna put $20 into this machine and see how much money it will give us back. And so, you know, we kind of made this decision that we're gonna keep our coins in one container and our winnings in the other. And which sounds like a simple logical thing, right? And so, you know, we start putting these coins in these slot machines, and every now and then a bunch of change would fall out. And of course you'd put it in your winnings bucket and you'd keep going out of your money bucket that you started with, and before long that bucket's getting low, and there's this sense of, wow, I like this. I put something in, it gives me something back. And every now and then it gives you something really big back. And so before long you begin in your mind to say, well, you know, what if I just moved a few of the coins from over here to over here? And you continue playing, right? And so we went through this process throughout the week, and it was a fun thing. I mean, we actually came out ahead. I wouldn't advocate it. I mean, it's not the kind of thing that I would necessarily encourage you to go do, but it was interesting because when we got home and we were moving into a rental home, and we were getting our stuff set at our house, we didn't have a washer and dryer, and so the first few times we had to wash our clothes, we went to a laundromat. And so I put a $10 bill in the change machine, and immediately I lit up. I mean, change starts dropping out of this machine, and I'm like, Julie, we're winning. I mean, it was amazing how over the course of a couple days, something that started so harmless began to get this hold on me. I mean, it's like I thought I was above that. I thought that surely I can go do this. It's not going to be impact. The moment I started hearing the coins drop, it's like I lit up. Why is that? I mean, why is that? That something so quickly? Because there's a promise in these things. I mean, these things, you know, so many times they start off so innocent, and you say, well, this is fun, and yet what used to be enough is no longer enough. And I say, oh, I got all these coins, I'm going to play till I'm done, but all of a sudden it wasn't enough. I needed to go back and continue on. I need more. Which is what Paul says here in the second part of this phrase. He says, it leaves us with this continual lust or this longing for more. It's like, what I have is not enough. It never satisfies. And so I continue. Now, what Paul's talking about here is quite interesting, because he says, you know, it never results. I mean, when things begin to get a hold on us, we say, well, I can make a decision to overcome this, and yet our behavior goes differently because all of a sudden it begins to get its teeth in us. We begin to realize that the result is never joy or peace or happiness. I mean, when we participate in things that begin to control us, there's never this sense of gratitude at the end of the day. I mean, it's like, you know, when we go to the store and we have that thing that we had to have, and it has the tag on it, and we get it home and we're looking at it, so excited to have it. And our first thought isn't, I wonder how good I'm going to look in this. We're like, I wonder if they have it in red. I mean, before I even tear the tag off, I'm thinking about the next one. Because there's this continual longing that's created in us for more. And so whenever this happens, whenever this compulsion, these urges that begin to control us, I mean, you know, we think that we can control them, but they begin to control us. What begins to happen is there are these promises that we think, if I get another one, if I get another hit, if I experience this again, then I'll be satisfied. I mean, fill in the blank, whatever it is. Then I'll have enough. And yet we get there and it doesn't deliver. And you know, something really interesting begins to happen, because when we expect something that doesn't deliver, what is usually the result? The result is usually anger. And think about this for a moment. Follow this line real quick. What is anger turned inward? I mean, these are private things. What is anger turned inward? It's depression and despair. And I don't know about you, but whenever I get a sense of being depressed or begin to feel a sense of despair, what usually begins to happen? I begin to have cravings. And I have these cravings that cause me to go and engage again. And then I find myself again. It doesn't deliver, and I find myself angry and depression, despair. And the cycle just continues. And it begins to take over my mind. I mean, we feel in a sense like as the cycle begins, as it continues, these things begin to get their claws in us and control us. It's like I'm going out of my mind. I mean, it's like this thing has a grip on me. It's almost like a chain. I mean, you got a piece of chain when you came in. It's almost like this chain has a grip on me. It's attached to me. And all of a sudden, I thought that I could control it, but it begins controlling me. And all of a sudden, I'm attached to it and I can't break free. And then there's other things in my life and that I say, well, I can handle that. And all of a sudden, what once I could control begins to control me. And all of a sudden, I'm attached again to it. And it's like it has this power over me. It's like as much as I try, as hard as I say in my mind, this is what I'm going to do, the trajectory of my behavior, of my life, takes a different course. If you have a Bible, turn with me to Mark chapter 5. I want us to look at a picture here, a couple pictures of Jesus, a very vivid picture of Jesus encountering a man who's being controlled by what's called here in the scriptures an evil spirit. And, you know, in other passages and other references of this story, it's referred to as a demon, or this man is demon possessed. But the bottom line is that there's something controlling this man. There's something controlling his thinking, his behavior, and it's something outside of himself. And so Jesus performs this miracle. And, you know, miracles, as we look through the Bible, are like audio visuals of the day. I mean, they didn't have projectors, they didn't have screens, and so it's like Jesus is going to give them this audio visual of spiritual activity in the world, because so many times spiritual activity can't be seen, right? And so every time we see a miracle, it's like Jesus giving them this visual picture of how spiritual activity works in the world. And so as we look at this story, we find this detailed account of this destructive behavior, basically this destructive pattern that's playing out in this man's life. And regardless of what it is, whether it's a chemical dependency, whether it's an addiction, whether it's something psychological, the result is the same. It's destructive behavior that's hugely influencing, impacting his life. So Mark chapter 5, beginning with verse 2, it says, when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bring him anymore. No one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he often had been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and then through the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. I mean, so the picture we get here is this man is literally out of his mind. I mean, he's outside of himself. It's like he's self-destructing himself. He's naked. He's just in the tombs because no one could contain him. It says, when Jesus saw him from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." And then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion." Now, this is the spirit talking right here. This isn't necessarily the man. This is the spirit. "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." Now, there's a question what Legion means. I mean, a Legion was like 1,000 or so soldiers in the Roman Empire. All right, so there's a question. This is almost like there's 1,000 things controlling this man's life, and they're saying, we have control over him. We are Legion. And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. Again, the demon here, this evil spirit. Now, you know, it's really interesting because we don't really get evil spirits here, right? In the Western world, we don't see demons, we don't see demonic stuff very often. I mean, we don't really capture what that looks like or how it feels or what it means to see something like this. And in fact, I was reading something this week that was kind of asking that question, why don't we see that? Well, one of the answers was maybe there's enough things in America and the Western world that can control our lives that Satan doesn't really need to present himself that way. I mean, maybe there's enough things that we allow to control us in much the same way that we don't really need to see this kind of physical evidence in the world. And it's really interesting because, you know, throughout the New Testament, people are a bit fuzzy about who Jesus is, right? Have you ever noticed that? I mean, they're always kind of like, well, we think he's Elijah. We think he's John the Baptist. He might be this ghost who came back from the dead. I mean, they're like, you know, we think he's a good person, but there's a question, is he really who he says he is? But, you know, everybody's a bit fuzzy. I mean, even today, we have a lot of people that are a bit fuzzy as to who this person Jesus is. But notice, the demons know exactly who Jesus is. I mean, there's no question for the demons. I mean, not only do they understand him by his identity, but they understand him in terms of his power and his authority. I mean, notice what he said here. They begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the air. I mean, they understood that Jesus had the ability to break the chains of control that they had over this man. Verse 11, it says, a large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them. He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank and into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there. And notice this, what does it say? Dressed and in what? His right mind. And it says they were afraid. So we don't know everything that took place other than all of a sudden this man comes into this encounter with Jesus, and what with these thousands of things that were controlling him, the spirit that was controlling who he was, all of a sudden he encounters Jesus and it says he was in his right mind. I mean, it's like the full shalom, the full peace of God had come over him. It was like he'd regained his mind. I mean, he was at once out of his mind and now he's experienced the full shalom, the full peace, the full harmony, this sense of being at peace with himself, being at peace with God, but peace with everything around him. And it said people were afraid. Why were they afraid? I mean, maybe they're afraid because they're like, what in the world happened? How did this man change instantly like this? Or maybe there was this sense of the economic impact. I mean, Jesus just sent 2,000 pigs over a cliff into the ocean, into the sea. And like, if Jesus keeps doing this, it's going to decimate our community, whatever the reason. They saw this change and they were afraid. You know, the demons of our lives, I mean, you know, may not possess the mind as vividly as we saw right here. I mean, it may not be this legion of demons that possess us, but the result is just as destructive. I mean, when things come in and begin to control us, they begin to take over our thinking and our minds. As much as we say, God, this is what I want, we tend to go a different route. Because these things have their teeth in us. Why don't you take out that chain that you received when you were coming in this morning? You know, it's because these things, they're like that chain that just keeps holding on. I mean, for some of us, maybe it's excessive drinking. I mean, it's like I want to stop. I mean, what began as a couple and was within context of what I felt like I could handle, all of a sudden has turned into more. And so it's like this chain. It's like I can't get out of this cycle. And as much as I want things to be different, I'm chained to it. Because I have this continual lust and longing for more. What I think it's going to produce, it doesn't. And the cycle continues. Or it might be destructive lust. And we've gotten this habit of thinking, you know, if I just click one more time, then it's going to be a little better hit, and it's going to in some way fulfill a little deeper, and it's like I've gotten attached, and it's become chained to me, and as much as I want it to be different, I can't break the cycle. Or it might be something like a destructive eating pattern, and what started as something where I was just trying to look better, feel better about myself, became this habit, and now it's like every time I don't eat, every time I go to the bathroom and get rid of what I just put down, it causes me to have this sense of maybe then I'll be accepted. And people begin to notice and they begin to compliment me and I begin to say, wow. And this pattern begins and it begins to feed me, and yet at the bottom of it, it's empty. And yet I can't break it. It's like this chain is attached. As you sit there and hold your chain right there in your hand right now, I just want you to think, what is that thing? No, we all have them. What is that thing that controls me? What is that thing that has this power over my mind that controls my thoughts, that when I say, God, this is what I want, or this is the direction I want my life to go, this chain continues to pull me back a different direction? What is that thing that you so desperately need to be freed from?